Hi, this is John Udell. Today's podcast is a conversation with Frank Martinez. Frank founded Blue Titan Software, which was recently acquired by SOA Software, where Frank is now Executive VP for Product Strategy. SOA Software's strengths were in the area of control and governance. What Blue Titan brings to the table is more along the lines of mediation and tolerance. We talked about how these two complementary themes play out not only in the context of WS Star or WS Heavy kinds of services, but also in the area of WS Light services like, for example, RSS.
The focus of SOA Software's business prior to the Blue Titan acquisition was really being in the control business, right? And that's around governance and security, particularly runtime governance, policy enforcement. The result of bringing the two companies together is that we now span a set of capabilities, not just around control business, but also around the tolerance business. And that's really the business that Blue Titan was in. Bringing that to the mix, we really think represents something that's unique because what we're seeing and, what your readers have seen and, your listeners have seen what we're all hearing is that people are coming to the opportunity around service orientation from different trajectories. People are coming at it, from the perspective of, environments that are strictly typed. On the other hand, there are folks that are coming at it from a completely different spectrum and saying, I want to solve a set of problems that are dynamically typed. And being able to span that continuum, I think, is becoming increasingly important if you're going to deliver on this.
At SOA.com, under the subtopic of management point, there's a description of policy enforcement and enablement mechanisms. Is that describing Blue Titan, or is that describing pre-existing?
No, that's really describing the pre-existing capabilities around service manager stuff, yeah.
So the Venn diagram overlaps in some ways. I mean, there were forms of mediation that were being provided formerly, and now there are additional forms of mediation.
Yes, and there are additional forms of policy enforcement as well.
Right.
The area really in terms of form factors, where there's the most obvious overlap is really between the standalone management point the proxy management point and the Blue Titan intermediaries.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing there is that we are consolidating those capabilities.
Do you think that it would be helpful at some point to try to converge the terminology?
Oh, big time.
Right. If you look at this through a Layer 7 lens or through a Blue Titan or now Blue Titan and SOA Software combined lens or an Infravio lens, you come to words that either are or are not the same, talking about concepts that either are or are not the
same.
That's
exactly right.
Miko Matsumura at Infravio wrote to me a week or so ago about some kind of an interop initiative, which I take to be partly about just this kind of agreement on what are we talking about.
Yeah, so Miko probably wrote to you about SOA Link.
We're
one of the participants in that.
Yeah.
As we are in a variety of different interop initiatives. There's a couple of different things that are kind of mixed in there, together. First and foremost is, what in the world is policy? Let's just start there. There's the kind of the explicit definition, which can be easily constrained to a class of metadata that defines constraints which are intended to be shared as part of interchanges between different participants in an SOA ecosystem. In other words, it's on the wire. It's what you represent on the wire, and you expect other people to consume or to be able to understand and then do with what they need to, right?
Okay.
I think that we all had a more liberal definition of policy. We are clearly all building systems that are much more configuration driven as a result of moving metadata around. Not all that metadata is really well suited to be shared with other people. So there's some clear boundaries that need to be applied there. With respect to the entities, the what I'll call the policy ecosystem entities, there should be some clear definition around what is a policy implementation point versus what is a policy enforcement point versus what is a policy definition point. Same thing gets extended from the run times up into the change time and design time, right? So what's a policy definition point? What's a policy management point? So there's this, you know, there's a vocabulary that we should just all come to agreement on. And then the third aspect is really around the interop side, right? So, you know, let's call the first two items aspects of a reference model. And, you know, the third is, okay, if you were to apply that reference model, right, you know, who has capabilities and what parts of the reference model, and do you interop with the other players, you know, that are in other parts of the reference model? And I think that's really much more of what the SOA link side of the equation is really all about is, you know, we can all respectively walk into customers and say, look, this, you know, this product that has this sets of capabilities, it's in this part of the reference model, you know, that plays this role in the SOA ecosystem, works with this other stuff that's over here.
It seems that the sort of soundbite for SOA software and Blue Titan is governance plus tolerance,
yep.
Right? I think that makes sense in a soundbite kind of a way. But I wanted to get back to some things that we've talked to before around tolerance and the radical acceleration of service consumption and the broadening out of service consumption.
Sure.
For example, RSS enablement that you and I have talked about.
Yep.
For people who don't have that context, review what you mean by RSS from a service enablement perspective and, you know, how that broadens consumption of services out and how then working back to the governance angle, you know, that can be brought into a control system.
Sure.
As well.
Sure. Let's kind of take a step back. So how are we seeing RSS used today? Well, we're seeing it used in a variety of ways. The most common usage that we're seeing is, we're seeing it as an underlying enablement technology for being able to syndicate unstructured information, primarily, in the area of the blogosphere. What is kind of, you know, grown, directly out of the earth organically here is probably one of the most scalable, without argument, the most scalable, you know, unstructured machine-to-machine, you know, ecosystem on the planet. It works.
I'm not sure scalable is exactly the right thing here. I mean, it's just, you know, it's scalable because it is web technology, and so it's no more or less scalable than any other system of HTTP clients and servers would be, right? It's, you know, I would say the word might be popular.
Yeah.
Right. It's popular. It is an extremely broad, maybe, well, almost certainly the broadest XML application.
Yes.
On the planet, right? The one that has the most reach, the one that involves the most people, the one through which the most information is flowing. And so the interesting question is, at a time when there still is debate about the broad uptake of quote-unquote conventional or WS-heavy kinds of services, right? This is obviously an interesting and useful dynamic. How can we harness this?
That's right.
And exploit the grassroots nature of it, but at the same time bring it into the kind of a control structure that, from an enterprise perspective, we want.
Yep. So let's walk through a couple of those items. You're talking about, you know, WS light, you know, kind of versus WS heavy. You know, what makes them both WS? Well, there's a couple of things. One is, you know, if you look at most, you know, web service environments today, they, you know, leverage, you know, web protocols. We leverage HTTP. The other thing that's common is, you know, we're leveraging XML in both cases. I don't think anybody can argue that, you know, that those two items have become incredibly popular. And when you add to that, you know, REST, style, or web style interfaces that have been exposed by some of the more popular services on the web, people like Yahoo, Google, and Amazon, we start to kind of get a picture that these are styles of consumption, you know, which enable very, very broad reach. And reach really being the key here, you know, versus richness. And that's kind of the two sides of the spectrum. What we started to see was that as a result of a couple of things, number one, people seeing RSS flowing in or out of their enterprise, different types of applications, in some cases it's people just, you know, subscribing to other people's blogs or what have you, there started to be exposure around some of the potential applications of RSS in an enterprise context, and particularly around new styles of applications, not just necessarily using RSS for unstructured information exchanges, but potentially, you know, could RSS be utilized for application-to-application interchanges and in the scenarios where you had information-intensive applications, number one. Number two, where those information-intensive applications had some tolerance in terms of staleness for some of the data. We have lots of applications like that in the enterprise today.
Maybe most.
Yeah. I would say that that those applications where you actually need real time, transactional integrity of the data are probably make up a very small portion. And so, being that with Network Director we're really in the business of mediating and moving these interesting shapes of XML in a controlled fashion, between and across enterprise boundaries. What does that mean? Well, it means stuff like, how do I integrate my internal RSS feeds with my existing enterprise identity access and security management systems? Because most of the information interchanges that we have today within most enterprises have to be secured. They have to be governed. They have to be done in a role-based context or exposed in a role-based context. And that represented a pretty interesting opportunity for us to leverage capabilities that we had already built into our intermediaries and into our mediation infrastructure for solving that class of problem. That's a natural class of mediation, for us. There are some very interesting applications within the intelligence agencies.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the stuff's coming from, right? Where people are saying, what we need to do is we need to be able to have very low barriers for very broad-scale information syndication. And we have a series of enterprise systems that we'd like to expose those capabilities out of, including the application logic. But as we do it, let's make sure that we don't violate, the integrity of the either the privacy constraints that we have, or violate the integrity of the information security constraints that we have, or even more importantly, let's make sure that it's properly targeted to whoever it is that's consuming it. So let's make sure that it's the right stuff for the right person at the right time, right? In other words, along with this, this broad-scale consumability doesn't come for free. There's another problem with this stuff is that it grows like mushrooms, and, before you know it, you've got hundreds of feeds that you're subscribing to. Well, now what do you do, around filtering particular types of topics for particular types of roles given particular types of situations? It's the attention problem, applied to the enterprise.
With combinatorial security implications, which
absolutely, absolutely,
which are, no matter how you slice it, non-trivial. But beyond RSS, there are broad classes of RESTful, lightweight services that are in need of the kind of control and governance that we also would like to be able to apply to WS-heavy kinds of things.
Yep.
So that's really the general strategy.
I think that's
right?
The general meme, absolutely.
Yeah.
RSS just happens to be, one of the, RESTful types, of services that's in need, of these, types of capabilities. But yeah, I think you nailed it right on the head.
So from that perspective, can you spell out some kind of a concrete example of one of these more lightweight kinds of HTTP, REST, POX style services? Which is in need of intermediation and kind of talk through the kind of mediation that can be applied.
Well, I'm going to come at it actually from the other, from the other angle, which is there's no shortage of services today that have WS heavy semantics which sit inside of the enterprise. One of the problems associated with that is that they can't be consumed in a RESTful way outside of the enterprise.
Yeah, that's the flip side of it.
And I think that's much more of a real world concrete example. In other words, the reach has been somewhat constrained because of the impedances that exist between, more RESTful or POX, style models.
But it's not simply about if you can hit the thing with an HTTP GET.
Yeah, more than that.
Right. The subtext here is that you've wrapped these policies around it.
Absolutely.
And you have to be able to get at it's not just firing an HTTP GET at the thing. You have to present a compliant client-side interface that is going to be able to negotiate the policy.
Yeah.
Isn't that
really
the issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so what we start to do is we start to look at some of the concerns as we start to move up the stack. And we say, okay, well, what are some of them, and what are some of the ones that we want to be able to mediate? Well, clearly security models. So if you want to actually allow consumers that can simply do, say, channel-based security using HTTPS, with an HTTP GET using POX and be able to communicate with that same service on the back end, being able to resolve that against a WS security model that exists
mm-hmm.
for that service
mm-hmm.
on the back end. So that WS star service is expecting to receive a set of WS security headers, right?
Yeah.
Well, those aren't going to be, sitting in the, in the message when it comes over in a POX invocation.
That's right.
being able to resolve those impedances, being able to resolve synchronicity impedances. The service that sits on the back end may actually be exposed asynchronously. It may be a process which is exposed asynchronously, and one of the operations on that process may be what you're exposing, via an HTTP GET. Well, it may be simpler from a programming model perspective for the developer, you know, who wants to consume that service to consume it synchronously, using a set of HTTP, GETs over a POC style invocation. Mm-hmm. Without having to be to succumb to the complexities of an asynchronous programming model, so being able to insulate the consumers of those services from semantics that they do not have a natural inclination and to be able to support is a problem, and I think that's part of the greater opportunity here, right? The greater opportunity around this is don't force people to have to engage with you under the terms and conditions that you're prescribing in your environment. Allow them to take advantage of your capabilities in their native context, right?
Yeah. There's the inverse scenario as well, right, where you endow the relatively unsophisticated service with a more robust wrapper of security and policy.
Absolutely. I might have a POC-based service. And what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to, to allow clients with more sophisticated WS-heavy capabilities, for example, around addressing or security, around, reliable messaging semantics or asynchrony, to communicate. So an example of that would be, say, you've got transactional systems that historically have been synchronous. Mm-hmm. Taking and exposing those services directly, over the web, to a variety of different clients which may be sitting inside of partner organizations, and doing that synchronously may actually do things to the system that the system was never designed or intended to be able to support. Well, for a minute, let's take a set of KIX processes running on the mainframe exposed directly using POCs over HTTP. That may not be the ideal scenario. You may want to actually be able to throttle some of those more advanced capabilities. So, as an example, let's say that it's much more useful for you to take those processes which are running on the mainframe in the KIX space. Let's say that it's account data, or that it's trade validation data, or order management, processes from a provisioning perspective and telco space. What you want to be able to do there is you want to be able to expose that to a broad number of clients, provide elasticity potentially, through mediation, of the asynchronous to synchronous, style of message exchange pattern, and then be able to queue those messages up, right? And as you queue them up, allow those synchronous systems which sit on the back end to gracefully dequeue them at their own speed, right? Mm-hmm. Along with that, you may also want those external clients to be able to actually, send you a message in a WS security header, with a WS security header that contains a SAML token, right? And you want to resolve that internally, to channel-based security, as an example. Thereby ensuring that you can have more application level security infrastructure that you leverage with those external parties, while internally not having to extend your channel based security to have to support everybody on the planet.
So these are kinds of mediations that a lot of SOA vendors are providing in WS heavy space, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But the proposition here is that the same broad range of mediations be also more broadly available across a variety of transports and invocation styles and
web service programming models.
Yeah.
That's the key. The key is the programming model impedance resolution. How can you do this, right, and not only provide the capabilities, within the web services, framework of specifications. I mean, we basically have done at least three things which are really hard. The first of which is provide implementations within the web services framework. The second of which is provide mediations between different versions of specifications that are in that framework. And the third thing is be able to actually resolve impedances between different web service style programming models.
So to switch gears completely, I went and looked at Prosper and that other peer-to-peer banking service that you mentioned.
Zopa?
Yeah. Thought it was absolutely fascinating. You know, not at all really from a technical perspective, but more from a... actually, in last week's interview with someone else, I was mentioning the Yochai Benkler book, Wealth of Networks, which I haven't actually read all of yet, but there's a pretty good talk that he gave that sort of summarizes this. And the key takeaway for me was something that I've kind of intuitively understood, but I hadn't really sort of heard it articulated in quite this way. The value of loose coupling in the human domain is that it creates a new economic capacity in the world. Because formerly, when human beings entered into economic relationships, into work partnerships and collaborations, it always required relatively expensive and durable social structures. You know, it was never the case that people could transiently affiliate to come together, do work, and then, you know, maybe or maybe not maintain that affiliation over time. You hear this meme in IT contexts. One of them is IT is moving in the direction of what some people have called the Hollywood model, right? Which is, you know, it's not just outsourcing. It's, as my friend Andy Singleton likes to put it, it's the just-in-time assembly of software components on the one hand and talent on the other hand around a project, just like Hollywood is always...
It's a just-in-time capability composition.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think a lot of people, when they hear the term social software, they think about in terms of, you know, what's all, you know, socializing, right? You know, sharing photos, you know, having fun together. You know, that's kind of the message, you know. And but I don't think it's at all sunk in that there is what you just described, right? This just-in-time ability to compose working relationships or partnerships or collaborations amongst people, you know, to pool not just knowledge, but, well, in, you know, the peer-to-peer banking case, right? To, you know, for people to become dynamically composed co-op banks. I don't know. That's kind of off the track, really, of what we were just talking about in a way, because it's not at all a technical. It's not a technical discussion, right?
Yeah, you and I had been having a conversation around a talk that I had gone out and done for one of our very large financial service customers, and it was on, you know, the notion of the emergent web. One of the things that you just actually touched on is, you know, well, what are the dynamics of emergent systems, right? You know, how do they work? And that's a lot. It's very much, you know, what it is that we're starting to see. The web is an emergent system. It is the single, you know, probably most obvious instantiation for most people today of an emergent system. The context that I had shared with this particular client was, you know, they have some very robust set of capabilities in terms of processes and in terms of infrastructure for both payment processing as well as for currency exchange and distribution across the globe. And you know, Prosper as well as lending. So they actually have a lot of capabilities around lending and, you know, processing of loans as well. And one of the things that was interesting to them was that, you know, here was Prosper, you know, which is a manifestation basically of you know, of a market where people were coming together, you know, and, you know, and collaborating to package, you know, a loan in a peer-to-peer context in a, you know, Frank and John get together and, you know, they make a third-party loan under the same terms, and, you know, Prosper provides the function of operating the infrastructure and packaging it and servicing it and so forth. And with Zopa, it's a merchant to consumer, or actually a consumer to merchant scenario. And it's not just consumer to merchant, but it's, you know, primarily, you know, first world, you know, consumer to, you know, primarily to the, you know, to the third world, you know, merchant market. And a very interesting set of dynamics there, because we're also traversing kind of, you know, social and economic, you know, boundaries that have been, you know, incredibly persistent over a very long, long period of time. And when you look at that, you know, one of the key questions, you know, that I posed, you know, to this particular client was to allow them to build on you as a platform, because they're obviously building their own infrastructure, their own parallel infrastructure to solve these problems. And when we talk about, you know, about the, you know, economic efficiencies, you know, and the focus of, you know, social software really, you know, being around a much more economically evolvable model, It's a question I think a lot of people have to ask themselves. It's a question very large companies should be asking themselves today, and that is, you know, how do you combine, you know, the well-controlled, you know, well-governed, you know, very well-defined, you know, process spaces that you have today as part of your service orientation initiatives, and how do you leverage that into a edge enablement architecture and infrastructure, you know, that allows a brand new set of economics and access to a brand new set of markets that you've never been in before.
Although I suppose now that I think about it, in the case of Prosper anyway, they are holding very tight control over the financial processes here, right? It's just an interesting kind of Web 2.0-ish
yep.
kind of company doing a new kind of eBay-like thing.
Yep, absolutely. I think that aspect of it is in fact the part that's most interesting. You know, that and the fact that as a result of this, what they basically have done is they've taken a function which has primarily been within very tall skyscrapers for a very long time to actually being fulfilled primarily by individuals.
I suppose we can tie this back in some way like this. I actually looked at signing up with them because I thought I should just put $1,000 into this thing just to see what happens, just because I want to be, right? I just want to have some engagement with it just so I'll pay attention to it over time, because I just think it's a fascinating model. And when I went to sign up, they wanted my social security number, obviously, because they had to do credit checks. And I asked them if they could assure me that they would not retain my social security number. And they couldn't really deal with that question. So it kind of gets to this question of, I'm happy to have you, sort of mediate my relationship mm-hmm. to the money, but I'm not sure I want you to control my relationship to
That's right.
the credit card agencies, right? I would actually like, if possible, I would like to have that be a more direct relationship and then have control
yep.
over how you get connected to that. That does suggest a model in which we have some kinds of service relationships.
There's a similar scenario that I've seen, for example, where there are today some software as a service solutions that are in the marketplace, and people have retrofitted them with either REST-based interfaces or with RSS-based interfaces on top of an existing web service, or that will provide you an RSS feed that's a view of some certain information that sits behind a mm-hmm. web service inside of one of these things. And the security model is that, it's, using HTTPS, I have to give them my credentials for that particular software as a service provider, completely separate party that's mm-hmm. that's exposing the RSS feed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same problem, right? It's like, well, wait a minute.
Well, I guess in a way everything is going to keep coming back to Hailstorm until we finally, create Hailstorm. But, this is that exact scenario, right? I mean, I would like Prosper's request to flow through me for me to attach a one-time permission for a credit check, right? And I would like to have that, I would like to know that that flows through
yep.
me. If it doesn't need to be a real-time kind of thing, which this is a perfect example of something that doesn't, right? There's no reason why a message can't flow through me and, take a day for me to catch up with and send along and another date, right? It
right.
doesn't have to be real time, like a lot of things don't. Abstractly, I would like to have an XML message flow to me. I would like to, sign some attachment to that message for the use of some designated next hop. I would like a return receipt to know,
right.
know that, yeah. that happened, right? Are we getting anywhere with this kind of stuff?
I think we are. I think we are coming at it from a couple of different directions. I mean, you probably spent your fair share of time, with Phil Winley and a lot of the stuff that he's doing around identity management space and mm-hmm. The workshops that he's been running at IIW and things of that nature. And I think that there's no shortage of people that are trying to solve this problem and are trying to solve it in a way that scales. That's really the key.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother can use it. And not necessarily even have to know how it works or what's going on under the hood. But by the same token, you and I can use it and understand very well how it actually works and that it's legit. And I think that's really the challenge, right? Is making it work in a way that ultimately does give us individual control, but by the same token, allowing it, to scale in a way that, for all intents and purposes, for the typical application, really makes it as ubiquitous as possible.
Well, this really does tie back to our earlier discussion then, because in effect, what I'm saying is, I would like to assert a policy.
Yep.
And I would like to assert that policy on the use of my social security number by party A through me to party B. It's a really interesting test case.
Sounds like one you might go after.
Or you might.
Well, or we might, right?
That's what I'm saying.
There's always needs to be an individual on the other side, to help prove out that part of the use case. But as far as the kinds of things that we're in the business of doing, we're in the impedance removal business. That's mm-hmm. fundamentally it. That's mm-hmm. one half of our business, right? And you nailed the soundbite earlier, right? It's tolerance plus governance. That's the business of SOA software. It's those kinds of things that will allow, the current and the next generations, of the applications and the processes and experiences that we're building, to really be better for people.
Well, it's certainly the case that I was impeded.
You sure were, weren't you?
Well, thanks again, and you have a good weekend. I aim to do the same.
Thanks.